Okay, so I totally forgot to add in the guy's take and the intro and the outro with yesterday's episode, or well, last week's episode on Why Bitcoin the Series, as we get into part one of that one. And I had some really good, I thought I had some decent commentary on it, and I wanted to expand a little bit on those ideas, particularly with a little bit of a rant towards the end that I feel like is even more relevant today, with a couple of conversations I've had. I'm just kind of amazed sometimes at the perspective that the average person has about where the world is, what's changing and what isn't, and basically just depressing. Basically just a deeply, deeply negative, static, nothing is going anywhere and nothing is getting better. And it just blows my mind that so much is lost on these people that they've been trapped in a mental box of just not seeing opportunity, of not seeing the change, of not seeing the growth, and not seeing that the mental box that they are in is not the real world. It's not the real world. It's a fairy tale. It's a propaganda wall that they have put around what people are allowed to think is possible, and they've never stepped outside of it. But anyway, so not without doing a whole nother guy's take right now, but that's what we're gonna have here, and I'll release this without any advertisement or anything like that. I'll have another episode out very shortly because I'm working on finishing up one right now. But for now, this is the commentary, the guy's take from Read 533, Why Bitcoin, the Series, chapters 1 through 6. All right, let's hit a short guy's take here before we close this one out. But this is the beginning of Tomer's really great series here. And one of the key takeaways here, well, actually, funny is this was entirely true about Bitcoin needing to be chosen, that there was no mandate on Bitcoin, and there was never any indication that this was going to happen. It seems kind of crazy that that's actually not the case anymore in El Salvador. Now that it is legal tender, you essentially have to accept it as payment. You don't actually have to hold the Bitcoin. You still don't have to choose the Bitcoin to be held, and you'll be given the option of immediately converting it into dollars. And I guess this is a inherent inevitability with the concept of a legal tender law, is this must be used for all debts and payments, public and private, etc. But I really wish that wasn't there. It feels very anti-Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is a natural money. That is what makes it powerful. It should be chosen. It should be voluntarily chosen. It is open source. It is permissionless. It is an independent system that must earn your trust. And that is why we know it works. That is why we know it is a powerful money that continues to grow. Because the longer it is here and the more that people choose it, the more we know it has earned its position in the market. So the legal tender thing is a little interesting in that dynamic. I really don't, that part of it doesn't feel right. But as a number of people in the Audionauts pointed out, like, that's basically legal tender. That's what it means to stipulate that this is legally accepted, is that if somebody is being paid in that currency or wants to pay in that currency, it is legal tender. You must accept what is legally defined as money. So that kind of sucks. Bitcoin is a non-political thing. It is, or it's not non-political, it's apolitical. It is uninterested in the political system at all. It does not know it exists. But obviously, this doesn't mean that the political system cannot still tell us what to do, and Bitcoin may be a part of that. So interesting that Bitcoin can't force you to use it. Bitcoin has no enforcement mechanism. All it is a natural, independent money that can't be corrupted, but people can still be told what to do. Governments will still tell people what to do. The Bitcoin will always be open source. It will always be an open global network. It has no idea your race, your creed, your sexual preference, your jurisdiction. It has no idea that borders exist. It has no idea that El Salvador exists. Bitcoin itself is entirely independent and unbiased. All it cares about is whether the data it receives is perfectly valid by the consensus rules and has the proper signature for the ownership of every Bitcoin on its ledger. Outside of that, Bitcoin cannot know, cannot care, and cannot force anything on anyone. Now, part two, or chapter two here, why Bitcoin's rules are enforced by physics. This is something that I think is really important about proof of work. Proof of work is the bridge between the real world and the digital. It is a digital task, a mechanism of mathematics that proves you have a real cost in the real world. And by limiting and guiding or managing Bitcoin's issuance and the creation of Bitcoin and the protection of its history by using an actual, objective, measurable, real-world cost through a math problem makes it a money defined and defended by physics. And that's both the proof of work as well as the SHA-256 encryption. So the encryption algorithm is another way to do the exact same thing. It's another way to take a limitation of thermodynamics, a limitation of actual physical reality, the presence of insanely large numbers, and the fact that we can just pick one at random out of it and no one can guess it. Only with explicitly us telling them which one we picked. You know, a lot of people have probably heard this, but the key space of a SHA-256 key is as large as the number of atoms in the visible universe. This is the scale that we are talking about. So if you wanted to, what you are doing when you pick a SHA-256 key at random, it's as if you are traveling anywhere in the universe, totally at random, going to any planet or any dust field or star, whatever it is, and picking out a single atom from anywhere in the universe without telling anyone, and knowing that the space to look for that atom, for that one key, is so unbelievably massive that it would take to the ends of the human race, to the ends of the earth, to the death of our star, and using every ounce or watt of energy and thermodynamic power possible, accessible in any way, shape, or form, in the most efficient way imaginable, in order to come anywhere near guessing what that number is. The encryption around your ownership of Bitcoin and the proof of work that defends going backwards through the Bitcoin history, through the Bitcoin ledger, from editing it after it has been confirmed, after it has been stamped, is like an invisible force field, literally a force field of energy, proof of the astronomical cost to undo something in the Bitcoin system that exists in the real world. Without that, it is just someone else's authority. That is what it's always been in the digital space. That's what proof of stake is. You don't see proof of stake in nature. You see proof of work in nature. Because it's objective, it can't be corrupted. If it's a real cost, you know someone has to do something real in order to get through it. There is no authority that can skip the work. We aren't trusting someone not to corrupt the system. We aren't trusting someone to not take our keys. We aren't trusting someone to not edit the history of Bitcoin. What we are doing is verifying, and we know exactly how expensive and how difficult it is for them to do so. And that's why we can trust them. That's why we can use this system with people we don't trust, because I don't have to trust them. I trust the proof of work. I trust my key. I trust the astronomical cost of physical, real world resources, the physics that defends my ownership and the editing of Bitcoin's past. We do not trust, we prove. And that's one of the most interesting things about Bitcoin, is that it is this, that's how we achieved scarcity in the digital realm, was the ability to connect it to something in the real world, that bridge. And there's two pieces, actually, I've read on the show by Hugo Huyen. Pretty sure there's a couple of other ones about this as well, but I think I'm specifically thinking of the two-part series, Anatomy of Proof of Work and Bitcoin Chance and Randomness. And these are really good, talking about exactly that sort of thing, why this is a bridge, what makes proof of work and what makes Bitcoin connected to the real world. How is it that it truly is, even though it's digital, it is defined and protected by the laws of physics? I'll be sure to have those articles in the show notes so you can check those out. Definitely recommend it if you haven't heard them before. They're really good, and it's such a fascinating concept to really dig into the role that proof of work plays and the expansiveness, the power of a public-private key pair. You know, this is kind of at the heart of the cypherpunk ideology of what it means to be able to, that defensive asymmetry, the ability to create something very easily and very cheaply that has the asymmetric cost of requiring staggering amounts of energy and staggering amounts of difficulty in order to undo it. It is the ultimate tool of defense. Normally, the opposite is true. In the physical realm, typically, the very opposite is true. It's very difficult, and it requires an enormous amount of energy, an enormous amount of work and organization to build a castle. But it doesn't take that much energy or organization. It takes a small bomb to undo the security provided by that castle. Destruction is almost always, actually, technically, it is the, that's one of the laws of thermodynamics. Always the universe is leading to more entropy. So destruction is always a simpler task than the creation or the order of things. But cryptography changes this. Cryptography flips this on its head. And if you can combine cryptography with privacy so that you don't even know where you're looking or who you're looking for, and they have the wall of encryption around them, this is how cyberspace becomes an entirely sovereign and entirely different environment for the rules and the laws of violence. This is why the ultimate dream of cypherpunks was to have an independent money, a way to store and protect value in the digital space that had this asymmetry, and this would essentially defund or take from the violent monopolies, from the corrupt and the authority, the corrupt and totalitarian authorities, their power and command over the resources of people, because the dynamics of violence had changed. You should really check out Eric Kaysen for some more stuff on that. Eric Kaysen has such amazing pieces on kind of that cypherpunk ideology, I guess, that perspective on the world, and just what kind of power the tool of cryptography really is when you put it in the hands of the individual. And this truly, this does, back to, I think this was like part 5 about the new frontier. This opens up a new frontier. This is a new space. This is the West. This is the American dream reborn. We have a crazy new space. It's volatile. There's so much to build. And it's just this open, it's open. Everything that we need to do is still ahead of us. There's so much potential here. And there is so much that Bitcoin can do, so many problems that it can solve. and the 21st century adventurer is in Bitcoin. And it's the only place with any hope. It's amazing how gross the antiquated, like the mainstream view of the world is. It's just disgusting. I can't believe it. Like, it would be so awful to be stuck in that still. I mean, people just want to crap on this thing with El Salvador. They're just like, people, it's a dark hole, Stephen Hanke and all this stuff. It's just unbelievably ridiculous how petty and negative and how you just want to see the hate and the disgust in everything. There's just no hope. There's no hope. There's no dreams. They don't want to accomplish anything. They just want to tear everything down. They just want to shit on everybody else. They just want to point the finger and blame the next problem on the next person. There's no hope or desire to change themselves or to better themselves. It's just an utter mess. What's their vision of the future? It's climate change. It's dystopia. It's everything's going to collapse. Everything's going to be consumed by corporations and the whole world's going to flood. It's just awful on top of awful on top of depression. It just shit. You want to go to somewhere where there's hope, where we're going to build something, where we're actually going to fix the problems? And maybe not, maybe we don't, but why the hell give up? Why assume there's no solution? Why just stand around and bitch all day and talk about who did it? Let's actually fix stuff. Let's actually make a plan. Fix one little thing. Then move on to the next. How else are we going to get anywhere?
It's too volatile.
Is that what stops you? Is that it? Is that too much? Okay, do nothing. Do nothing. Sit on your couch. Drink your giant tub of sugar water, watch your garbage TV, hate the world, buy cheap plastic crap, and blame your problems on everybody else. But you're not going to take us down with you. Misery just loves company, doesn't it? Like, that's the thing that seems to bother people so often, the people who hate Bitcoin, the people who really just shit on it so much, is how much fun we are having. It is hilarious how angry they get when they try to shove the price. Oh, the price crashed by 30%. How's that working out for you? And we just don't care. Just don't care. The anger is palpable. They hate that they don't get their way. They don't get the reaction they're looking for. This isn't about short-term price. You know, I'm here. I want to do something because I want to do something meaningful in the world. I don't want soft corners. I don't want fake stability. I want to meet the world and find out who the hell I am as part of it. Bitcoin is the new frontier. And we have a hell of a battle ahead of us. We have so much shit to build. And there is so much volatility coming at us today, coming at us tomorrow. And it's going to be here for the foreseeable future. And I am here for every second of it. No one ever discovers or will do anything of any importance in life if they can't even work up the nerve to leave the bay because they're scared of some waves. Bitcoin is for the adventurous. And if that's not you, if you like your couch and your soft corners and your government-approved stability, don't come here. It's not going to work out for you. Bitcoin is the open waters. Bitcoin is the new frontier. So, that'll do it. I'm sure I could rant for a little bit longer. But let's close out today's episode. Much love to swanbitcoin.com/guy, where you get your automatic, no-hassle savings plan. The solid, reliable sales for our open seas. And then, of course, your BitBox O2 to store your keys safely, the robust, strong ship that will carry us into this crazy new space. Swan Bitcoin and BitBox, check them both out at guyswan.com. That, thank you for listening, guys. We'll have many more reads to come. We're going to be finishing out Tomer Strohlite. I don't know if I'm going to do these back-to-back. There's still so many other pieces that I want to dig into. So I might be releasing these every two or three episodes, but I'll keep this going, and then we're going to have the full audiobook of this piece or this series available soon. So keep an eye out for that. Don't forget to check out BitcoinAudible.com. Vote for what you want to listen to next. And follow me now at TheGuySwan on Twitter. Finally updated my handle. It feels good. And thank you so much for listening, everybody. This is Bitcoin Audible, and I'm Guy Swan. And until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.